A lot of U.S. presidents have spent some time before and during their terms in office playing sports, everything from golf, tennis, and football to wrestling and fencing. One president, Teddy Roosevelt, did pretty much all of that and a lot more. He advocated for a life filled with physical exercise, and our next guest says that Americans at the time followed his lead. Roosevelt's time in office saw a boom in the popularity of organized sports, leaving us with a lot of the athletic culture we still have today. Ryan Swanson's an associate professor of history at the University of New Mexico. He's the author of the new book, The Strenuous Life, Theodore Roosevelt and the Making of the American Athlete. That's out today. Ryan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, give us the origin story. Where did Teddy Roosevelt's passion, maybe obsession with physical activity get started?
You got to start with his childhood, actually. So Theodore Roosevelt has terrible asthma as a kid. And this is beyond, you know, tightness of breath or thinking today like needing an inhaler or something like that. From age three until his early teen years, he can't breathe. He has kind of these crises on a daily basis, so much so that he can't go to school and he can't compete athletically. And so initially, you know, his early part of his life, he can't do this strenuous life that he'll promote so vigorously for in his adulthood. But when he hits his teen years, his father actually sits him down for a father-son chat. And to paraphrase, he basically says, you know, I'm proud of you. You're well-read, you're well-spoken, you're a smart young man, but if you don't make your body, you're not going to succeed in life. And so he challenges him, basically, deal with your asthma. The family had tried everything, you know, all the remedies of the day. Now, I'm a father. That doesn't strike me as particularly fair to tell your kid to solve their own asthma, but that's what he did. And Roosevelt remembers it as a turning point in his life. He tells his father, basically, I accept the challenge. And from that point forward, he gets heavily involved in physical training, wrestling, boxing. He starts going to a gym on a regular basis, and something rather miraculous happens. This terrible asthma actually goes away, at least for the most part. Now, what we know today is it's pretty common for kids to age out of the worst of asthma in their teen years. But for Roosevelt, he'll always keep this connection, the idea that I was involved in athletics, I worked out, I, you know, strained my body, and I got better and I got stronger. So he'll keep that connection in his mind, both for himself and more broadly, throughout his life, and he takes that into the White House. So that's kind of, I think, the genesis of why he's so interested in sports.
Now, your book traces Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's personal arc, but it's happening with a lot of relevant stuff going on in American society. You write a concern that as we become a more urban culture, we're getting soft, weak, lazy, we lack exercise. Can you talk about how Teddy Roosevelt and others at the time tried to tackle that, what they saw as a problem?
Yeah, by the time Roosevelt takes the White House in 1901, the nation is, you know, several decades into urbanization and industrialization, and there's a real concern that this generation is weak. They're not fit to be American citizens. To be honest, it sounds somewhat like what you hear today. You know, our kids are playing too much Fortnite and they're, you know, staying in their room. So I think there's some real similar angst. But Roosevelt believes that, you know, I mean, on some level, he'd love it if the U.S. was in a war some of these times to kind of improve men. But if that's not available, you know, he believes that athletics can serve a role in this changing society. In a, you know, New York City, for example, where he's from, you know, there aren't very many open spaces. There's not a lot of room for activity. So you have to carve these spaces out. You have to create gymnasiums. So Roosevelt, along with other leaders like Luther Gulick, who is influential in the public schools, athletic league in New York City, Dudley Sargent, who's really the forefather of physical education at Harvard, and others, you have these individuals and organizations pointing to athletics really as part of the progressive movement to fix what's wrong with society at the turn of the century.
Talking to Ryan Swanson, his new book is The Strenuous Life, Theodore Roosevelt and the Making of the American Athlete. A lot of what you just said has stuck with us. Another thing that came out of Roosevelt's time in office was what we now know as the NCAA. What was happening in college athletics, in particular college football, that led us there?
When Roosevelt's in the White House, there's an abolition movement related to football. Basically, by the time you get to 1905 is when it in some ways peaks. You have around 19 deaths. Academics kind of argue over the exact number, but you got 19 football players dying on the football field in 1905. You have scores and scores of terrible injuries. So with that going on, there's a movement which makes sense on a lot of levels to think about why we are playing football at educational institutions. And this abolition movement, ironically, is led by the president of Roosevelt's alma mater, Harvard. Charles Eliot does not want football at Harvard, despite the fact that Harvard's the football power of the time. So with these kind of pushes, this pushing back against football, you have reform movements on the other side, which are trying to kind of round off some of the rough edges so that the game can remain palatable, yet still violent, but still part of college campuses. So out of that, there's a lot of meetings. You know, this is an American story, so there has to be meetings. And there's some compromises. Eventually, you'll get the forward pass in a few years introduced. But out of those compromises and meetings, the NCAA is born, really with the desire to regulate college sports so that it develops character and it makes strenuous young men and women, but it doesn't kill people and it doesn't compromise the mission of universities. So that's the NCAA as it gets going in 1906.
One bleaker side of the story you point to is that in part Teddy Roosevelt and others were concerned about a vigorous, strenuous life for what they saw as the well-being of the white race in particular. Can you talk about the racial side of this story?
Yeah, Roosevelt is, I think, has something in common with the majority of white America at this time. He can connect in his own mind the idea of athletics and physical prowess to the preservation of his race. And Roosevelt is a man of his times to a certain extent. He sees the white race as superior. He certainly has an imperialist streak, as you know, evidenced by his desires in the Philippines and elsewhere. So Roosevelt, you know, on a personal or on an individual level, he wants, you know, people to be treated with dignity and equality. But systematically, he sees the white race as needing to be preserved. And he connects that to athletics. You know, if white boys and girls are able to develop their physical skills, stronger lungs, stronger muscles, that's only going to help the white race continue to dominate, at least in Roosevelt's view. So yes, that is certainly a dark underbelly of this. And as we think about athletics and race today, I think it's worth noting that issue has been part of sports in America as far as back as we can look, basically.
What can we see in our youth sports landscape, our school gym landscape today that we can trace back to Teddy Roosevelt?
The connection of elementary and middle schools and high schools to sports goes directly back to Roosevelt's time. In 1903, the New York City Public Schools hires a guy named Luther Gulick, who is an absolute revolutionary. He's kind of a wild man. He has all kinds of ideas about making Americans healthier, but they hire him to be the director of physical education for the school district. And it's a really daunting task. Basically, they say, all right, we've got 600,000 kids. We've got, a budget of several hundred million dollars. We need you to make our kids healthier physically because we're noticing that they seem to be, despite all the advantages of technology that are coming, they seem to be weaker than we think they should be. So they set him loose on this task with really very few resources. And as part of that, he sets two things in motion, really. First of all, he creates physical fitness testing in the schools. If you're of a certain age, you probably remember the presidential fitness test, mm-hmm. Where you had to run a mile and you had to do the shuttle relay and you had to try to do a pull-up. You know, it was always hard for a lot of us. That's set up by the Public Schools Athletic League, led by Luther Gulick in 1903. He also, though, sets up the idea of interscholastic athletic competition. So school teams for elementary age kids, middle school kids, let's let them compete in sports. Let's have these big track meets, these big basketball tournaments as a way to promote physical competition. So, you know, if you think of the idea of student athlete, you know, from elementary all the way up through college, that really has roots in this period of 1903 or of Roosevelt's administration. So I think we're seeing the benefits and the problems of that legacy.
In our last few moments, you've got a lot of anecdotes about Teddy Roosevelt's obsession with athletics. One of the ones that struck me was that as president, he was disappointed. He had a hard time finding boxing partners who would actually strike him.
That's right. He invites several former champions into the White House, and he'll tell them at the beginning, you know, as they're putting on their gloves, I want your best shot. Now, you know, if I was a boxing champion, I certainly wouldn't do that, and they didn't either. But he'll get really frustrated with them, and he'll still give them a black eye, even though they won't hit him back because he's president. So, yeah, he's always frustrated with this.
But he does feel bad about that if he gives them a bloody nose or a black eye because he knows they were holding back.
He does. He does. He kind of can't help but compete, but he realizes that he has actually rather limited athletic skills, even though he competes and loves it so much.
Ryan, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Ryan Swanson, Associate Professor of History at the University of New Mexico. He talked with us about his new book out today, The Strenuous Life, Theodore Roosevelt and the Making of the American Athlete.